Investors worry a Chinese conglomerate on the edge of collapse could test the stability of the nation's financial system. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. 25-year-old Evergrande Group has a hand in a number of industries, including healthcare, autos, theme park developments, even bottled water production. It's also China's second biggest property developer. But credit ratings agencies say time might be running out for the company. It's racked up more than $300 billion in debt, and last month reported a 29% drop in first half profit from a year ago. Though it sold some of its assets to try and pay down that debt load, Fitch said last week default is probable, and investors are wary. So far this year, the company's shares have tumbled more than 76%, and today trading on the company's May 2023 bond was halted due to what the Shanghai Stock Exchange called abnormal fluctuations. Mark Williams, chief Asia economist at Capital Economics, explains what went wrong for the company.
China's property sector has been in a boom for about the past 25 years, fueled by urbanization. But as it's gone on, there's been this huge competition amongst developers to provide the homes. And increasingly, they've been borrowing more and more in order to finance the construction. And Evergrande's the biggest of them, and its debts are now colossal. And the government is really worried about it. So the government has been putting limits on the amount that they can borrow in future, which has made life very hard for Evergrande and for the other big developers in China. And so increasingly, they're actually turning to families and households to put down large deposits for properties that haven't yet been built. And that's the way that they are kind of remaining in business.
So I guess, is it not so much that the company has gotten too big for itself? I mean, it's in a lot of different businesses now. Is it more sort of the regulatory crackdown that's sort of like the straw that's broken the camel's back here?
Yes, it's the regulatory crackdown that has triggered the problems that Evergrande is facing. But the reason for the regulatory crackdown is simply that they've borrowed far too much on expectations that they'll sell more properties in future than I think is really realistic. China's huge wave of urbanization has slowed. And now when regulators look at the property market, they are concerned that a lot of the activity is essentially speculative. And that's not something that the government wants to encourage. And it's potentially quite destabilizing as well, because if prices don't go up, if they start to go down, then all of a sudden these people are going to be sitting on losses.
So for Evergrande, does it seem like a collapse of the company is inevitable, or is a restructuring a little bit more likely of an outcome?
I think an outright collapse is unlikely, partly because of its scale. We are likely to see a significant sort of managed restructuring in which I think the authorities will step in and make sure that the families that have put down lots of deposits get the money back or get a property. But a lot of the others that have lent to Evergrande, and that includes China's banks, will lose out and will probably not get much back on those loans.
And what does that mean for China's financial system as a whole? I mean, is it in a position that it can cope with some kind of restructuring of this company?
Yes, there'll be pain. We're looking at about $100 billion worth of loans and other borrowing that Evergrande has made. So that can be absorbed. Then there's sort of the follow-on question is, well, what if it's not just Evergrande? There are other big developers out there that are struggling, which could spread the pain more widely. I think overall, the banking system has enough capital to withstand these sorts of losses, but it may well be that there are some smaller banks out there that have lent too much to Evergrande that are going to be in big trouble.
And does this have any implications for the wider global financial system?
The direct exposure of foreign investors to Evergrande and to the other big developers is not that high. So foreigners shouldn't be taking too big losses. But it's perfectly plausible that sort of worries about what this is telling us about the health of China's economy and the health of its financial system then ripple out through markets beyond China. We've certainly seen that happen before.
Mark Williams from Capital Economics. Thanks for breaking this down for us this morning.
You're welcome.
Well, checking the numbers now, the Hang Seng in Hong Kong dropped 1.5% today, while other major benchmarks tiptoed slightly higher. That's after Beijing authorities told ride-hailing companies they want better worker protections. Meanwhile, Alibaba shares closed down more than 4% on a report from the Financial Times today that regulators want to break up Alipay, that's China's biggest payments app with more than a billion users. Nearly half of the world's gamers are now women and girls. That's according to research shared with the BBC, which for the first time illustrates success of women in esports. But there's a catch. They're still only taking home a fraction of the millions of dollars won in competitions around the world. The BBC's Joe Tidy has been looking into why.
She's going to shoot you, she's going to shoot you. Press A.
The all-female team Cloud9 White are dominating all other women's teams in the game Valorant. But they're fighting hard to break more records and beat the men too. Here's the captain of the five-woman team, Mel Capone.
It can be like a 10 to 14-hour job daily.
The team are encouraging all competitive female gamers to challenge the status quo, that women can't make it at the sharp end of gaming. New research from esportsearnings.com, shared exclusively with the BBC, puts stark numbers on the issue. You have to go all the way down to 338th, to play a Scarlet to find a female. It's not like women aren't playing. Research suggests that nearly half of all gamers are now female, with growth in many countries, particularly in Asia. 23-year-old Malaysian Betty Chai is a semi-professional Dota 2 player.
We won!
I'm earning just a bit, but I've taken like a few projects from streaming partners. That's how I managed to survive, I guess.
Dota 2 has the most lucrative esports scene going. It's gearing up for a $40 million tournament. Once again, there will be no female finalists this year.
Five to the grand finals here.
Betty thinks that one of the reasons there are so few successful female esports stars is because of the immature culture in grassroots gaming.
Most games, it goes two ways. They will say, oh my god, I love you, this kind of stuff. Like, they never seen a girl in their life. Sometimes it's like a toxic one. They'll be like, oh, woman, go back to the kitchen.
Some people think the only way to get women onto the biggest stages is to split esports into male and female competitions entirely. But not everyone agrees.
What's the point if you're only playing against like a very small section of the Valorant as a whole?
Spray.
Cloud9 White think that one solution could be to encourage gaming organisations to fully back more women's teams with the same support given to their male rivals. Here's the captain again.
It's like similar to when the 4-minute mile got broken, when no one had done it before, and then one person does it, and then following that, it's like dozens more people just the next year are suddenly able to do it.
2021 might not be the year for a major breakthrough, but many hope that esports will soon begin to see the potential in its huge, untapped female talent pool.
Seb!
I'm the BBC's Joe Tidy for Marketplace.
Finally, a bit of relief on the way for Lebanon. The nation's financial ministry says within days, the International Monetary Fund will give it more than $1 billion in desperately needed cash. That will help ease the severe financial crisis that's led to a shortage of basic goods, including fuel and medicine. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.